Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is March 8, 2012, and tonight we're talking with educators interested in welcoming and supporting new teachers into the profession. I'm your host, Tanya Baker, at the National Writing Project in Berkeley, California. We have an exciting show for you today about supporting new teachers. We'll join research on networks and networking with examples of programs that support new teachers, and we'll think together about how best to introduce early career teachers to the National Writing Project. As always, if you are listening to us live, we invite you to join us in the chat room where we're posting links to materials related to tonight's program. Tonight, we are pleased to have three guests to talk with us about their experiences supporting new teachers with a networked approach. We are welcoming Kira Baker Doyle, author of The Networked Teacher and assistant professor of education at Penn State University, Berks. Kevin Thienis, teacher consultant at Boise State Writing Project. And Lynette Jimerson, teacher consultant at the Bay Area Writing Project. Thank you all for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
I love that part. I'm so excited to just jump right into this topic, and I'm very excited to have you here with us, Kira.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, good. I read The Networked Teacher a few months ago, and it just keeps popping up everywhere. Another colleague just told me today that she had read it, and I know that Lynette also mentioned to me that she's read it. So we are all really excited to talk to you about this work. Many people are calling your book timely for applying a social networked approach to the discussion of how to support new teachers. Can you start by telling us what you mean when you say network and where that idea comes from?
Sure. I think what most people think of immediately when they hear social network is this idea of an online network like Facebook or LinkedIn. And that's a little part of what I mean by social networks. When I think about social networks, I think about all the relationships that we kind of build up through our lifetimes that that we make either face-to-face or online that provide us with resources or support or information or even just inspiration. So it's all about the personal connections that we make. That's really what I mean by social networks. And, we can have multiple networks going on at the same time, friendship networks, advice networks, and collegial networks. So what I'm studying is this idea of social network theory. I'm trying to understand how all these networks function and allow us to access the resources like information and inspiration that are kind of embedded in these networks. And that's what a lot of theorists would call social capital, like the social currency in our networks.
I'm really glad to hear you expand the notion of networks right in the beginning beyond online networks. In the writing project, I feel like we've started saying to remind ourselves and to remind each other that, we were a network before the internet, and we want to remind people of the way we've always been about creating a social network that utilizes tools like Twitter or Facebook, but really is separate from them. But I would love to have you go on and talk about the relationship of these different kinds of networks to this idea of social capital.
Yeah, I think you've got it exactly right. I think that online networks kind of help us visualize a lot of times what networks already exist. And so National Writing Project is certainly one type of a network that's existed for quite a while, and we use tools to help connect. And there are all different kinds of networks, and the different networks that exist in our lives all provide us with different kinds of social capital, different kinds of resources. So, and it kind of matters, what our networks look like, what the characteristics are of our networks. That shapes the way that we have access to resources. So, for example, if you have a very close friendship network where everybody in your friendship network knows everybody else, that'll give you a certain kind of special resource, especially, really a lot of trust and emotional support. But if you have a friendship network that, you know, not a lot of people know each other, you know, it may not be such a bad thing if you're really looking for new ideas, because when not a lot of people know each other in a network, in a friendship network, then you're all, you know, bringing in new ideas to each other, or especially to that individual. So knowing more about the characteristics of networks and understand that underlying idea of how networks work can help us understand how to provide and access the important resources we need as teachers and just as people.
Those are really interesting descriptions of kind of networks, and I feel like I could pick your brain about that forever. But I'd also like to know how you went from thinking about networks to connecting that particularly to new teachers.
Oh, sure. That's an interesting story for me. I became interested in networks because I was really interested in networks like the National Writing Project and more local networks. I wanted to sort of see how those networks worked. But I was also studying the ways that communities organize, kind of community organizing literature and those kinds of things. And I found that, you know, in this community organizing literature, there's this idea of social networks, of social capital embedded in communities. And I thought, you know what? I bet teachers develop a certain kind of social capital in schools that they use through all the collaboration that they develop in and out of school, actually. What is this social capital that they develop, and how does it support them? And then I realized that if I kind of worked with beginning teachers, that would give me a chance to really see that evolution of a network, how beginning teachers build social support networks. So that would give me kind of a glimpse into the underbelly, you could say, of social networking. So I found a lot of really interesting things that I, to be honest, didn't kind of think I would find in the beginning. But it's been very helpful.
Oh, I'm sure we'll want to hear more about it. I know in the book you talk about the different kinds of networks new teachers should or might strive to build for themselves. Maybe you could start at one end or the other. Like, did you find some things that were really successful, or maybe some things that were unsuccessful?
Sure. Well, I'll start with some of the more unsuccessful things that I observed. One of the things that I was really surprised to find, and maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised because I've certainly heard anecdotes before, but that a lot of the new teachers really avoided the formal mentors and administrators that were set to kind of set there to support them. So those formal kind of provisions for them didn't seem appealing to these new teachers. They really felt like it didn't meet the needs that they were looking for. And part of this was because a lot of those formal mentors kind of had their own agendas, and they didn't listen as much to what the teachers were struggling with. So that was an interesting finding. Another thing that didn't seem to work very well for new teachers was that they tended to rely a lot on friends outside of school, maybe former teachers for support. And when they did that, those folks who didn't understand the context in which they were teaching couldn't really help them navigate some of the initial challenges that they faced in trying to kind of understand how school worked, understand who to talk to in school to get resources. So that was something very interesting and surprising to me too, because who would have thought that, you know, not that reaching out to friends wouldn't be all that supportive, that it wasn't the most supportive thing for those new teachers. So really, I guess what I learned from the unsuccessful cases is that context really mattered, and also a kind of inquiry, a shared inquiry really mattered. And that led to what did work, what really did provide important professional support for these new teachers. One kind of network or sub-network that I discovered that provided a lot of professional support was what I call intentional professional networks. And these intentional professional networks looked like local folks who really understood the teacher's context and helped to really guide those teachers in their own inquiry. So there were close relationships with these teachers. There were folks that did collaborative work with them, and those intentional professional networks helped those teachers to navigate the micropolitics of school, to develop a sense of teacher identity. It was really important for really stabilizing them and getting them to understand how their school worked. But then on the flip side, I found another kind of network that was really important, but isn't often recognized in research and just everyday folks, I think, or isn't recognized enough. And this is a notion I call diverse professional allies. And diverse professional allies are folks that may not be recognized as support folks initially. They might be parents or even students or classroom aides. But they're folks who have kind of an outside perspective on the classroom and the school and can give some real insight to new ideas and also to what the students need. And when the teachers developed networks of diverse professional allies, they started thinking differently about their curriculum, becoming inspired, changing the way they did things, and kind of getting out of teaching ruts. But I have to say there's something that I've been learning more about diverse professional allies since I've written the book, and that's that I really think I could expand on this notion. I think that diverse professional allies can also include other teachers and individuals outside of school that can provide resources and information, because these folks are often helping these teachers to think in new ways and even kind of develop leadership in schools. So both of these networks, the intentional professional networks, which are really close and collaborative and local, and the diverse professional allies, which are, you know, more helpful for innovation and are really connecting folks with outside of the school, both of those seem very, very important.
That's so much for us to think with, Kira. That's really a great picture, I think, of some of the work that or of the work that's represented in your book. I wonder if, I think for a lot of teachers, especially new teachers, the idea of diverse professional allies, especially the examples that you give in the book, might not be the place that people would most think about sort of developing their professional networks. So I wonder if you could maybe share a story of an example of a diverse professional ally who was really helpful to a new teacher in your experience.
Sure. Well, one of the things I have to say is that I found that the new teachers who were able to make connections with diverse professional allies often did so through kind of a bridge teacher, through someone who already had connections to community members or folks outside the school. So a good example I would share is of a teacher I call Susan, who began working closely with parents through a after-school program in which, and actually it's after-school and in-school program, in which kids participated in choir. This particular teacher, Susan, started attending the choir practices and the choir performances and meeting with parents and realizing through meeting with these parents that she didn't really know her students very well, and that the kinds of messages that she wanted to really share with her students weren't getting through in the way that she was teaching. And she, kind of on a parallel journey, started changing her curriculum to be more inclusive of the student voice, but then also started meeting more after school with parents, going to basketball games, meeting more after school with students just to sit and talk with them. And it was really fascinating to see these parallel development of Susan really creating a strong, strong connections with parents and with the students, and then how that influenced her incredible developing curriculum on in integrating peace interdisciplinarily and student voice into her teaching. So I guess that's I think a really beautiful story of yeah. A teacher connecting with very many members of the community through these, you know, diverse professional allies and it influencing her teaching and her feeling supported in many, many ways.
That is a beautiful story, I agree. And I wonder if you'd be willing to tell us any more or a particular story from the work you're doing with the Science Teacher Network, I'm sure. As an out-of-school network, the National Writing Project would love to hear about this example.
Oh, sure. Well, I guess there's two interesting things that I've learned from looking at science teacher or professional networks. One, more recently, and this is something that's probably going to come out in the next couple months, is how teachers can develop as leaders through networking and how important, especially with science, having access to resources through our social networks can actually shape the way that we have influence in our classroom and in our school. And so I think that something that I'm learning a lot more about is how leadership and resources and the ways that we network all intersect. And especially around, like I said, I'm really interested in the diverse professional allies aspect and how reaching outward can help us develop as leaders. So that's one thing that's really interesting. Another thing that's been interesting is this notion, this is something I've worked on with a colleague, Susan Yoon at University of Pennsylvania, a notion called expertise transparency. It's a really big word for something pretty simple, which is just knowing what other people in your network know, knowing the expertise people in your network bring. And we kind of found through some of our research that when teachers have a better sense of what each other can bring, the expertise and the background knowledge that they bring in their own networks and share that, that they're more likely to engage in collaboration and develop, a back and forth communication that and so forth. So developing an expertise transparency in small groups, in networks, in professional communities is something that I think is going to be important to explore and understand and work on. Those are things I've learned through the Science Teacher Network research I've done.
Those are fascinating, and they feel like examples that might be similar or close to the kinds of out-of-school networking that Writing Project teachers do in the network. We'll have to see what you think about that. But
I bet. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it'll be really interesting to see how this idea of diverse professional allies relates to the examples that Lynette and Kevin talk about. But before we bring them in, I would like to ask you a couple more questions about schools as contexts of teacher learning. So I know you did your research with teachers who work in really different school contexts, and I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit more. I know you said some things, but what you learned about school contexts and how they support or challenge teachers in networking.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think this is another area that kind of surprised me in my own research, because I did research in three different schools that were each very different from each other, from kind of a, from, I guess maybe from a surface level, one was very hands-off, didn't have a whole lot of meeting time for teachers, didn't have any, you know, group meetings or anything. And you know, it kind of, and then this another one had some shared planning time, but not a whole lot. And then another one, the third one, I mean, was really the opposite. I mean, it had probably group meetings with different kinds of groups every day. There was lots of shared planning time and those kinds of things. However, one of the traits that all of these schools shared was that when there was room or time for teachers to collaborate, all of it was focused on having the teachers look at the students' test scores or make sure they were keeping pace with the curriculum. And what I saw was that this kind of exclusive focus on keeping pace with test scores and curriculum, that kind of thing, was really different than the questions that the new teachers had. So the new teachers were struggling with questions like, how do I connect with my kids? How do I make the curriculum accessible? Or, you know, how do I navigate my school? Like, you know, and
Kira, we're having some trouble hearing you. Are you still there? Oh, dear. Okay. I think we lost Kira. This is... Oh, let's see. Let's try again. Kira, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Phew.
Okay, good. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
All right. So back to where we were.
Right. The questions they actually struggle with.
Basically, the teachers' questions were a lot different than what these kind of formal, these formal school setups for them to collaborate, these school times were for them to collaborate on, and it made it very difficult for them. So I think my bottom line in learning from this is that it is important to have time to meet. It is important to have coaches and mentors and group meetings, but it really needs to be important to have kind of a culture of teacher inquiry and collaborative teacher inquiry where they're making space for teachers to ask the questions that are important to their students and to them, to their practice. And I think that that's, you know, really reflective of a lot of writing project approaches, too. And that's probably one of the reasons why this project is so wonderful, you know, wonderful for teachers and effective, and why people really feel engaged, because it really seeks to address the questions of teachers' practice and the questions that we struggle with every day.
Thank you. I feel like that's such a compliment to the writing project. I was thinking as you were talking about this, a shift in the attitude or frame of help for new teachers in schools, I was thinking, you know, geez, that sounds deceptively simple, like it should be easy, but it's really probably in most places right now a complete sea change in the organization of school culture. Mm-hmm. And given that, I'm wondering if in doing your research you noticed within the school context that do exist, any mm-hmm. common social networking mistakes likely to be made by new teachers?
Well, I think that this might be kind of a symptom of the internet age. But, you know, new teachers come into their schools with a lot of social networks that they know of because they have access to folks online and folks from, you know, folks that they feel really comfortable reaching out to that may not be in their school. But in the very beginning, when a teacher starts out, one of the things that's really important is that they understand how their school works, what resources are in their school, who in their school can help them get access to those resources. The only way that they can do that is to talk to people in their school. And I think one of the big mistakes that new teachers make is that they go to the internet and Google ideas for their classroom, or they go online to Facebook and ask their friend for advice or say, I'm having a bad day, and they forget that there's someone right next door that might you know, be able to not only help, you know, help them through that emotional stuff, but also understand the, you know, the culture of the school and those kinds of things. So I think that that's an important thing that is that can we can all really be easily sucked into because the internet is so easy to jump onto, you know.
Fascinating. I haven't really thought about the problem in that way, but that's brilliant. And if you were going to give new teachers, maybe you already said this, but if you're going to give new teachers any advice, what would it be?
Well, I have a couple pieces of advice I usually leave new teachers with. The first is that you need to, before you think about developing, you know, social support networks, you need to think about what you need as a teacher. If you are in those beginning stages and you really need someone to help, like a guide for your school, someone to help you understand your school, of course, you need to develop those intentional professional, you know, networks. You need to collaborate with folks, you know, locally so you can understand that. But, you know, if you're in a teaching rut and you really need that innovation or you really want to, experience kind of more leadership, then that means that it might be time to reach out to diverse professional allies, to folks who are outside the school to get new ideas and that kind of thing. So developing networks and being strategic about developing networks really depends on what you need as a teacher. And the other things that I usually say is, you know, remember that it is about inquiry, you know, sitting down and planning, doing co-planning with another teacher. If it's co-planning that you're not dedicated to, that you're not interested in, then that's not necessarily going to be great for you. You know, you want to do collaboration that's going to have kind of equal investment. Another thing that I suggest to new teachers who have no time at all to do any of this stuff is I tell them, you know, there's ways to kind of cheat time. And one of the ways to do that is to, instead of meeting one-on-one with people in your school or outside of your school, is to find ways to meet in groups, in small groups. So critical friend groups or even a book club, but something where you're going to get to know five people in 1 hour instead of one person in 1 hour. And it's much easier to kind of balance that kind of outreach when you can be involved in those kinds of ways. You'll get to know more people. And so those are some of the little pieces of advice I usually leave my my new teachers with. There's certainly a lot more, but I won't get into that.
That's great. That's a great start. Thanks, Kira. Your research is so rich and interesting. I think we could talk to you and learn from that work all day. But I'd like to use this as an opportunity to segue to hear about Kevin and Lynette's work on the ground. And not that your work isn't on the ground in writing projects. I hope you'll be able to stay with us and hear these stories about writing project-based projects. And maybe in the end, you'll have some time to respond to what you hear.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear.
That would be great. So, Kevin, I'd like to bring you in now.
I'm here.
It's been my pleasure over the last few months, I guess, going on a year now, to hear about this work that you've been doing and get the story out on the National Writing Project website. And I know your new teacher network, I guess we could call it, is largely based in your dining room, but it's built out of the Boise State Writing Project. And I was hoping we could start, maybe you could tell listeners about how you decided that the Boise State Writing Project needed this program.
Well, I worked a couple years with a pre-service teacher mentoring program, and we did a lot of research, and we had experiences there. And that grant came to an end, and our time came to an end, and I made the mistake of thinking out loud in front of Jeff Wilhelm, and I ended up with a job. But it's a great thing. It was from that when we realized that about 50% of new teachers leave our profession in the first 5 years. And that just seemed to me an awful statistic, and I wanted to do something about it. And in our research and everything we looked at, we saw a lot of programs, and I, you know, dovetailing on what Kira said about the coaches and mentors being not all that helpful to people. It's kind of what we saw too, and so wanted to do something else, turn over a new leaf, find something else to do that would connect people. So came up with this idea of doing it around my dining room table.
And can you tell me, I know you've written and thought about this, what were some of the bottom lines that you had when you designed the program?
Well, one thing was really important was that it be easily replicable. Anyone who wanted to connect with people and connect with new teachers could do the same thing. And because it's so low impact, I mean, most of us have a table somewhere in our house where more than one person can sit. So that's basically all you need. And another really important thing, and it goes back to what Kira said about the professional mentor, so to speak, is that it had to be non-evaluative because we wanted to be able for people to openly talk, openly share, that intentional professional network name that I have now for it, thanks to Kira. So we did that. It's inexpensive to operate, and it's done off campus, which is also very important. And having it done in a home just made it easier. And of course, I'm here, so it's easy to have people come to me. So, and then the other thing that was really important was that it would be honoring and of the new teachers. They came with a lot to give, and they're entering a profession at a particularly difficult time right now, and yet they're excited. They want to be a part of it, and they have a lot to bring. And we wanted to make sure we valued them, and not that they were coming to fonts of all wisdom who could solve all their problems, but they could be a creative force in solving theirs and others.
That seems like a really great writing project philosophy, Kevin, but one that I think people sometimes struggle with when they move their sort of writing project plan or their way of thinking to working with new teachers. So how does your program work then to enact these ideas?
Well, if I can paraphrase the movie, feed them and they will come. You provide food and you've got a crowd. And so it was... I'm a pretty good cook, and so people don't mind eating my food. And so I just invited these people to my family table, and it was a very comfortable, homey environment. Key thing that they bring to me is each week before the meeting, we meet once a month, they send me what I call gotchas and gorillas. And the gotchas are, what did you do or what happened in your classroom recently that really got things going, that whether you planned it or not. It may have been something that just happened or you planned it, but whatever it was, it worked really, really well. And so celebrate your victory with us. And the grill is obvious. What's the 800-pound gorilla sitting in your room that you don't know whether to shoot, kill, eat, run from, or whatever you're going to do? Also knew the power of conversation, of people interacting with each other in a less formal setting, but yet something where they were being honored for their expertise. And so I gathered a group. The first year we had everything from a fifth grade teacher to high school teachers in science, math, English, social studies. This year we've added two pre-service teachers to the group, so very diverse group, and that's very good. That's actually better than I thought it would be.
So you've got all these people who are, the thing they have in common is new teachers, but they could be working at any level, they could be teaching any subject, and once a month they just come to your house and talk about their work.
Right, and we start off the evening with just a conversation about what worked, what are your gotchas, and we go around the room and we talk about those, and what's been the amazing result that was something I'd hoped for, but I didn't realize how effective it would be that oftentimes when one person's talking about their gotcha, it solves the other person's gorilla. And so they look across the table at each other and go, that's just what I needed to hear. Thank you so much. And myself, and I have a thinking partner with me, but a lot of times we're just sitting watching these people bolster one another's hopes and aspirations and solve their problems and bring really tangible results that work incredibly well and are transferred, whether they're in an elementary, a middle school, or a high school classroom, and watching these people get excited about what they're doing, it's wonderful.
So the last time I talked with you, Kevin, your first year's cohort was done, but you hadn't, your second year hadn't really gotten off the ground yet. So how are things going this year?
It's going great. We are having another meeting here in another week and a half, and we're excited about that. But it has an equally diverse group with a bunch of new people and some of the ones from last year. We kind of graduate them, so to speak, when they're 4 or 5 year teachers. But we keep this group going, and it's really launched off well. And the same thing's happening again: the valuing of each other, the honoring of each other's expertise, the solutions to other people's problems, and them finding these sources of hope and sources of inspiration and sources of practical application have been really great to see that happen among them.
So if for writing project leaders who are considering work with new teachers, what would you say, Kevin? Is it worth it? And if so, what would you definitely want someone to learn or take away from your experience?
It is as easy as having a meal, or even less that. You could do it if you had appetizers or dessert or something. I think one of the few things you have to do is you have to take it off campus, and it's better not to have it in a restaurant because the meetings are supposed to be 2 hours. They usually last 4.5 because they don't want to leave. They don't want to go. They're here on a Saturday night, and they say, I got nothing better to do than this. This is great. So And the first year, some of the people that worked on it, when they gave me their final evaluation, they were glad that it wasn't in a restaurant because they'd all worked food service at some point in time and before they were teachers. And they found out that people like us were like tip-sucking vortexes because we wouldn't leave. We'd sit at the table forever and talk. And so that's one of the things that's really important is to do it within your home or someplace like that that's not school. And I think the thing that I take away from it was a comment one of them made last year when she shared something of a challenge she was facing with some coworkers and not knowing how to solve it. And when we talked through it that night, she, tears in her eyes, said, I am so glad I could say that here because I could not have said this in my lunchroom because I don't know where it would have gone from there. And so her finding a solution to a challenging situation as a new teacher with older teachers established in their ways and her philosophy not necessarily jiving with theirs, how to work through that was a tremendous thing and worth every bit of effort I put into it was to see those kinds of solutions, real world solutions for real world problems.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for sharing this with us. And I hope you also be able to stay around till the end so we can have
some I will.
End. Lynette, we'd love to hear about your work with new teachers as well. I know you know that I've been particularly interested in your work since we first met at a National Writing Project New Teacher Initiative meeting. And that I'm particularly interested in your frame of exploring teacher imagination. So could you get us started by telling the audience why you think imagination is important to pay attention to when you're working with new teachers?
Sure. So I'll do that by taking Kevin's last statement around the teacher who said, I was so happy to have this space because I know I could not have shared my gorilla at my school site. That teacher imagined sharing her predicament. She imagined having been rebuffed or not taken in with care. And so that her imagination, because we don't know what really would have happened if she had shared her issue at the school site. As Kira was saying, often teachers don't talk to the teachers next door. So they don't ever really know what might happen, but the imagination of feeling less competent or having your colleagues see you as less competent really, I believe, affects teachers. And so I look at spatial theory, and it's around how do we perceive the space of the classroom. There's a lot of work around the school space. You know, for instance, there are studies on how when adults walk into schools, they immediately lower their voices, or the fact that, you know, doors at the library are, it should be closed and people should be quiet. We do those things automatically because we have a sense of that space. And we also understand and we can imagine what would happen if we sort of broke those unspoken rules. And I believe that teachers, especially new teachers, but definitely even veteran teachers, also have an imagination of the classroom space. What does it mean to be the teacher in charge? What should I be able to do? What should my students be doing in that classroom? And so I'm really interested in how teachers' imagination of classroom space can either create a barrier for them trying new strategies and activities, or if we can help them to expand their imagination, we can help them rethink what an ally can provide, then maybe we can also push them beyond their current stance within their teaching practice. And so that's my interest around teacher imagination in space.
That's, just love to hear you talk about that. I've talked to you about that for days. Can you tell us, though, about your current work with new teachers?
Yeah, so right now I am working in a middle school in the Bay Area as an outside consultant. And so in thinking of Kira's terms, I would be a diverse professional ally, a sort of a bridge. I'm outside of the formal school system, but I understand the context of the school because I'm on campus enough to know what teachers are interested in thinking about and working on. And right now I'm working with an eighth grade math and science teacher who's in his second year as part of the TFA program. And similar to what Kira said, he's very interested in technology. He goes home every night and he Googles new curriculum ideas, and he was really interested in digital learning and one-to-one laptop learning. And in my work with him, I was able to help him and think with him on how to expand using technology in the classroom beyond students basically sitting and watching a digital lesson and answering questions on a Google survey form, to really think about how can writing and writing to learn play a part within his teaching. And I think part of the reason why I was able to assist was because I was aware of the context in which he was teaching, and I was still concerned about his question around teaching, which is, how can I use technology as an aid to teach my students? And so I didn't deter him from that question, but I went along on the inquiry process and added along the way a focus on writing.
That really picks up that idea that Kira mentioned of paying attention to a new teacher's inquiry rather than putting your own frame on it. But I really heard that echo there. Can you tell us more about the program in which you're consulting, or your relationship as an outside consultant to this teacher?
Yeah, so I started off as just a general outside consultant. I'm similar to a literacy specialist. I work for a nonprofit named Forwards that was started by another Bay Area Writing Project teacher consultant in honor of her daughter. And what we do is we partner with schools in order to help teachers' curricula plan in order to increase the level and rigor of writing within their curriculum. And so we start off by, one, just trying to get to know the teachers, trying to understand their context. And so I go to the school twice a week, and I really just hang out for the most part. I sit in the class. I help out when asked. I ask, you know, questions, both personal and professional, to get to know the teachers. And then I start to understand what they're really interested in, and I try to find a bridge between their interests and our goal of increasing literacy and writing within their curriculum. So it's a slow process, but once it gains traction, then it's a very powerful process because you now have, for instance, the science teacher really not only thinking about the technology, but also thinking about the role of writing within his curriculum, and now he's expanded his conversation beyond myself, and now he's asked other teachers to also pilot in their classrooms this use of the one-to-one digital programming. And so it's interesting how these networks can then develop and blossom and connect teachers in ways that if we only interact in the traditional way might not be possible.
I love that vision of the of taking time to just hang out, and I think it's so interesting the complexities of the modern world, how we might have lost track sometimes of how important it is, how much we learn or how much we can be of service when we just take some time to just hang out and see what's going on. I really like that image. Oh, go ahead.
You know, it's interesting that in schools, many times teachers are afraid when other adults come into the room to hang out. Mm-hmm. One is because, you know, you think of teaching and you think, well, I'm the teacher. I'm supposed to be able to handle all the students in my class and handle all of the tasks related to my class. And with another adult in the room, you're not really sure if asking for help is appropriate. You're not really sure if showing that you're not always able to handle it is going to come back in a negative way in terms of what other teachers and colleagues might say. And so hanging out is important, and it's tricky. And so I would normally start off with staying for 5 to 10 minutes, then having a little chat after, staying a little bit longer the next time, and then waiting for an invitation to stay for a whole class period.
I think you've really, I mean, in my experience, my own remembered experience as a new teacher, and also in my experiences of working with new teachers over the course of my career, I think you really nailed it on the head there by talking about how new teachers really can be fearful and think, sort of hold this burden that they should be able to solve all their problems or do all the work and not ask for help. I'm wondering if you have any advice about, you know, I think hanging out is one piece of advice, and this sort of depth of understanding about what that does and how to do it well is really helpful. But do you have other ideas about how more experienced teachers can disrupt this idea that a teacher should be able to do it all without overwhelming a new teacher?
Well, I think it starts with, one, reimagining relationships. So I think sometimes this notion, I know we call them new teachers for a reason, but that also adds a certain weight of not having an expertise in anything, and that may not necessarily be true. So I think one way to sort of disrupt the sense that you have to be able to do it all by yourself is for a veteran teacher to get to know a new teacher and then ask for some of that knowledge that that new teacher has to be shared. For instance, at the school I work with, a number of the veteran teachers are less skilled at using the technology. And so asking one of the newer teachers who are more versed in technology and starting a relationship that way could be one way to start. And definitely Kevin's idea of leaving the campus and sharing your gorillas and your gotchas and showing that no matter what phase of the career you're in, that these issues continue to come up and it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds very, I could again hear the sort of echo of Kevin's talking, recognizing the expertise of new teachers. That's very nice. Lynette, I'll close by asking you the same question I asked Kevin. For other people considering work with new teachers, what would you say? Is it worth it? And if so, what's a big idea you'd want people to take from your experience?
definitely think that it's worth it. Not only do I think that it's worth it, I think it's necessary for veteran teachers, induction teachers, and new teachers to all work together because it's the way in which we grow. The fact that teachers stay for 4 hours on a Saturday night is probably not because they don't have anything else to do, but that what they're doing is really feeding their professional growth and feeding their personal growth in a number of ways too. Anytime we engage with others, we have an opportunity to grow and to tap into our imagination and to find permission and find new ways to do new things in our classroom. And I say that it for veteran teachers for sure, and definitely for teacher consultants and teacher educators, working with new teachers allows us to stay fresh and stay creative and to remember that teaching is not stagnant and that there are always new ways to help children learn and help each other learn as well.
Oh, nice. Very well said. Kira, I wonder if I could bring you back in and maybe you could point out some things that you noticed in Kevin and Lynette's work that we could theorize from and build on.
Sure. Well, it was really fascinating to listen in and hear some great stories of work being done, and I wanted to commend both Kevin and Lynette for their work with new teachers. It's just really important work that they do, and anyone who works with a new teacher, I want to commend them too. So I do want to start with that. What I noticed, some really important big themes in both of their stories. One was around this idea of problem solving and how important problem solving is for new teachers and for building networks. And I especially heard that in Kevin's story. And the other is kind of a notion of belonging and how important it is for new teachers to kind of develop a sense of, do they belong here? Am I a teacher in this classroom? Do I belong in this school? And how working with new teachers can help them kind of feel like they belong and feel more present in their school through important kind of mentorship on their questions. And what was really interesting to me in both of these big themes of belonging and problem solving is where fear comes in, actually. I think that new teachers, this notion of new teachers really having fears around working with and reaching out to folks in their school or even outside of their school and kind of falling back on some of the easy way out kind of stuff, you know, just calling buddies or, you know, Googling the idea online can help, it is kind of a coping mechanism. But I think we have to think about, like, what's really causing some of these fears. And I think there's two main things. One is that we do have this traditional notion of what teachers do as teachers do it by themselves, right? That's something that, you know, many teachers will walk into a school, and that's still the culture, even though, you know, we've been on maybe 20, 25 years now with the notion of it's important to collaborate, it's important to work together, but there's still the old, do-it-yourself kind of a culture that is out there. And then the second thing I think that contributes to the fears of working with others is a fear of exposing oneself, that I am not a good teacher, or I'm not doing this right, right? And I think, you know, Kevin talked about making this comfortable space, a safe place, and that really spoke to that fear of exposure. I think both of those things, the traditional culture, the fear of exposure, leads teachers, and maybe not just new teachers, but many, many teachers, from holding back on collaborating and networking and building those networks. But when we actually think about how networks and networking and building those collaborations do benefit us, do help us solve problems, do help us feel like we belong, and we can develop our imaginations, it acts as kind of a kind of speaking back to those fears, you know, and that's what we need to do. We really need to speak back to those fears, and we need to help new teachers speak back to those fears. I have to say, to be honest, when I was writing this book, I'm not the most outgoing person, and I was sitting here thinking, I've got to write this advice for new teachers about how to reach out to folks, and could I do this myself, you know? And I realized that I'm going to have to challenge myself in my own workplace. I'm going to have to overcome some of those fears myself, but because of what I found in my research, because of what I've seen, how important it is to develop those relationships, it motivated me to overcome those fears, you know? And as a result, it's been important for me, and I hope that it will be important for other new teachers as they hear this and kind of overcome those fears, and that we as allies, as folks who may have some more experience, that we help them overcome those fears.
Thank you, Kira.
Mm-hmm.
Lynette and Kevin, I wonder if there's anything you'd add to what Kira said or point out and what you heard from each other. We have a few minutes left.
Well, it was very impressive to hear both Lynette and Kira share what they're doing and how it works and how all three of the things we're talking about dovetail so well together. And having given that opportunity for people to share their feelings, share their hearts, share the issues that they're facing and have it in a place where a real answer can come. And it's funny, you know, we're kind of afraid that if people really found out what I'm like, they wouldn't like me. And the truth is, when we find out what somebody else is both triumphant in and struggling with, it actually bonds our hearts closer together and makes us more of a community. And so it's just a crucial thing. And I think it's necessary to be a face-to-face contact as much as possible, real human to real human.
So. Yeah. I think it's important to remember how challenging it is to change a practice, to change, you know, long-term history and a way of doing things such as teaching in sort of an isolated way. And so patience and multiple opportunities to try again, I think, are really important. So if we could start to develop a sense that trying is a good first step and consistency matters. And so programs like Kevin's that are long-term, you know, year after year, and not programs that sort of come and then leave, or opportunities that come and then leave, I think are really important.
That's nice, Lynette. I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't actually thought about the role of consistency or being able to count on something as you're trying to grow or make a change. That's a very nice idea. I also want to say that this talk today has really made me think differently about the internet as a problem-solving device. I mean, I'm just fascinated to think about the sort of isolation of going to find another idea or another solution without somebody to sort of get through with.
I do think it can be important for folks who need new ideas, who need to be, who need to be inspired. You know, there's a lot of great resources out there. For teachers who are at that place, but if the teacher is not at that place, you know, if that's not what they need, and yet they're developing a network that's not meeting their needs, then that's when it becomes problematic. So don't want to down the online networks too much. Just want to make sure that they're meeting the needs of the teachers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just had never had this other vision of it, you know. I always see it as a source of good, so... and I just think about what's there, and when you're new and you're trying to sort through things, how important it is to have other people to talk and think about these things with, which this very radio show has provided for us today. I'm really so thankful, Kira, Kevin, and Lynette, for your time and for the work you're doing out in the world in support of new teachers, and for taking this opportunity to share that work with the National Writing Project Network. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks again. Have a great night, everybody.